Florence is forecast to slam into the Carolinas late tomorrow or early Friday. It's shaping up to be a serious storm with up to 3 feet of rain in some parts of the Carolinas and heavy rains expected all the way from Georgia to Virginia, not to mention the flooding from possible storm surges. Florence is the latest in a series of massive storms that have threatened large areas of the U.S. in the last few years, and the latest in a string of extreme weather events around the world this summer. All of them were revved up to one degree or another by our changing global climate. That warming climate and the urgent need to take stronger action to address the growing climate crisis, it's the focus of a big meeting this week in San Francisco called the Global Climate Action Summit. It was organized by California Governor Jerry Brown. The World's Carolyn Beeler is in San Francisco covering the event, so I gather the seeds for this meeting were sown back in June of 2017, last year, when President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement.
That's right. Almost immediately after President Trump stood in the Rose Garden announcing he'd pull the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement, state and local and business leaders formed this coalition called We're Still In, saying that even if the federal government was not going to be meeting its commitments to cut carbon, they would. And then shortly after that, Governor Jerry Brown announced that he'd be convening this high-level summit in California. And it's the highest profile move he's made in staging his own rogue foreign policy and picking up the mantle of climate leadership that the U.S. federal government has dropped. And it's important to note that California is the fifth largest economy in the world. So even though it's not a nation itself, it has a lot of clout in this area.
Yeah, but just to be clear, this is not an official meeting of any kind, right? It's not part of the UN process or any other formal international body.
It's not. It's a standalone independent summit organized by Brown and other leaders, including China's head climate negotiator. And it should be noted that this event comes at a time when action through that official UN has stalled a bit. Not as much progress was made as was hoped at a big meeting in Bangkok just last week. And current country commitments are still well short of the stated goal of the Paris Agreement to limit global warming to well under 2 degrees Celsius. So a lot of people are staking a good amount of hope in what are being called subnational actors, so cities and states and businesses.
So what do the organizers of the Global Action Climate Summit hope will come out of this? How are they going to measure success?
Well, the top-level goal is to start curving emissions down by 2020, which is, you know, just a year and a half away. It seems like a very ambitious goal. How leaders hope to get there is by peer pressure and getting states and cities and businesses to announce new commitments to cutting carbon here this week. Governor Jerry Brown tried to set the stage for that by making some big announcements about commitments to green energy earlier this week. And there will be more announcements coming out from the state of Virginia and private companies today. But I think whether or not this will be a success is something that's going to be a little hard to measure and might take some time to see what the end results are.
I'm sure the state of Virginia has a lot of other things on its mind, and I want to get back to Hurricane Florence here just for a minute. Last year, the U.S. was hit by two massive and incredibly destructive hurricanes, Harvey in Texas and Louisiana, and Maria in Puerto Rico and Florida. Now here we are a year later. We've got Florence. We don't know, of course, how it's going to play out over the next few days. But what do we know about the connection between these super powerful storms and climate change?
What we do know is that hurricanes are expected to grow more powerful and extreme going forward. There's a growing understanding that climate change is sort of making storms that start out small more likely to grow more powerful. And it looks like this upcoming storm, just like Harvey did a year ago, is likely to stall over land and dump a lot of rain all at once. So it's not that climate change is making storms more frequent. It is likely that it's going to make them more powerful and damaging.
The world's Carolyn Beeler in San Francisco. And if you would, Carolyn, just stick around with us here for a bit. Our partners at station KQED in San Francisco are also in the thick of covering this conference and the climate challenge this week. We asked our science editor, Craig Miller, to take a look at where we are with the climate crisis, how we got here, and where we might be going. Here's his report.
You can kind of think of global warming like tossing a bag of popcorn into the microwave. Anthropogenic, or human-caused, warming has been stoked since the start of the Industrial Age more than 200 years ago. But that first 100 or so years was kind of like the first minute in the microwave. It wasn't obvious that much was happening. But then, you get to that second minute. And you can think of all those individual pops as events: superstorms, extreme downpours, high tide flooding, droughts, melting glaciers, ferocious wildfires. They're like the signals that the climate is changing. And in popcorn terms,
we are in that second minute.
Inez Fung is an atmospheric scientist at UC Berkeley. I spoke with her at the edge of the Berkeley campus, surrounded by greenhouse gas emissions from traffic, construction, and by the generation that will inherit the problem, a problem we can already see unfolding around us.
30 years ago, we predicted it in the models. Now I'm experiencing it. You see the fires in western U.S., in British Columbia. And then, at the same time we've got fires, it rained 3 feet in Hilo, Hawaii, from the hurricane. That is a new record. At the same time that we have droughts and fires, over 300 people died in India from floods. We are not prepared.
Across the U.S., the average temperature has risen almost 2 degrees Fahrenheit since the start of the 20th century. Bill Collins directs climate and ecological science at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab.
So we've released enough carbon dioxide to continue warming the climate for several centuries to come.
That means a certain amount is already baked in, if you will. In other words, going back to our popcorn, even if you hit the stop button on the oven, some of those kernels will keep popping.
If we were to stomp emissions entirely of all greenhouse gases right this minute, we'd see roughly another half a degree centigrade by the end of the 21st century.
That's almost a full degree Fahrenheit already in the pipeline. So even if we shut down all emissions, which is not happening, we might still get to the threshold where scientists say the worst effects of climate change would kick in.
We're seeing years now that basically blow the roof off of records back to the late 19th century. None of the students in my classes have grown up in a normal climate.
Think about that. On the flip side, if you're over, say, 30 years old and can actually recall normal, that's over.
I have to say that all the projections that we made 30 years ago are still valid.
Inez Fung.
The only thing we had not anticipated, and you can put it in any way, is that the CO2 increase is much faster than we ever thought.
Despite the pledges made in Paris by every nation in the world, except this one, emissions are still rising. And even those historic commitments, if they're all kept, won't be sufficient to turn things around.
No, we're already beyond that. The commitments, I think, are a very good start, but they're just not adequate.
First thing we have to do is, as a global community, reverse course rather sharply. We think it is technically feasible.
Technically feasible, perhaps, but not easy. California, for instance, has the nation's most aggressive efforts to cut greenhouse gases. Overall, it's working. Total emissions are down 13% since 2004. And still, climate emissions from cars and trucks have been on the rise.
Cars literally are time machines.
Remember the movie Back to the Future?
First, you turn the time circuits on.
Doc Brown's time machine was a car, a slightly modified DeLorean, and perhaps in anticipation of future needs, electric.
This is what makes time travel possible.
Most of our cars still run on fossil fuels, which make for another kind of time travel. But Bill Collins says they're not taking us to the future.
They're taking the atmosphere back to a chemical state that it has not been in for millions of years. Currently, we have as much carbon dioxide in the Earth's atmosphere as we had 5 million years ago.
The world 5 million years ago was not our world. There were early ancestors of humans and the first tree sloths, but mammoths had yet to appear.
So our steam engines, our factories, our cars, in the space of, you know, a little over 230 years, they've taken us back 5 million years.
And Collins says we have about 25 years, or one generation, to reverse course. He and Fung both have their glimmers of optimism that technology and the boom in wind, solar, and other clean energy could quickly reduce climate emissions. Fung points to the young college students passing by us on campus as her best hope.
I'm very optimistic about the young people because they are they're very proactive about the future.
But Fung and Collins agree that time is what's running out.
Reporter Craig Miller there in San Francisco. Carolyn Beeler, also in San Francisco, is back with us. What is the mood there at the climate summit about how big a hole we're in and how big a challenge it is for us to dig ourselves out?
I've heard Governor Jerry Brown describe where we are right now as the base of Mount Everest. So it's widely acknowledged that we have a huge task ahead of us. A lot of people here express a lot of optimism, saying there are a lot of people working towards solutions on this. But it's a little hard to tell if that is optimism born out of necessity or if it's true that folks really think we will be able to prevent the worst impacts of climate change from hitting us.
Carolyn, you've also been speaking with some of the people who've come to San Francisco this week from all over the world to push for stronger action on the climate crisis, and we've been hearing their voices. Who do you have for us today?
So today we're going to hear from Shukra Haj Ismail. She has an interesting story to tell. She is the Minister of Environment for Somaliland, which is an autonomous region within the nation of Somalia that's been devastated by droughts that have driven internal displacement for the past several years.
All right, the world's Carolyn Beeler in San Francisco, thank you very much. And here's Shukra Haj Ismail.
And I'm the Minister of Environment and Rural Development for Somaliland. Climate change have impacted Somaliland so bad that you wouldn't believe it. We have experienced 9 episodes of droughts from 1996 until 2017. It impacted the livelihoods of millions of people. Thousands and thousands of livestock died, 80% of Somaliland livestock. You can imagine a country losing 80% of its assets. So many people became destitute, so many people became displaced, so many people migrated from rural areas into the urban areas. More than 10 camps are now in the capital. It is not an issue that we can say it will be solved today or tomorrow, no. But we have also to think about the long way. I believe that the international community will come together. They are coming together now. And I believe that there are so many active people who are really aware of what is going around. So I'm very optimistic that the international community will do something about it. Long-term programs, resilience programs in development should be there, because so many people are displaced. When you really look into the eyes of these people, we are their hope. I have to have hope because they have hope in us.
Shukra Haj Ismail of Somaliland there, speaking with the world's Carolyn Beeler at this week's Global Climate Summit in San Francisco. Check out more first-person climate change stories in our Instagram feed. That's @PRI the world.